Beermosa.
Beermosa.
It just works.
Yeah.
Beermosa. All right, episode 32, Stone Creek Coffee Podcast. We're recording in the morning today, which is unique for us. I tend to view this as an afternoon show because we always record it on Monday afternoon, unless we're at Origin or something, after we're done with a long day of work. Monday's kind of our meeting day, so we get all the work out of the way, then we talk coffee for a little bit. It's actually Tuesday morning when we're recording this. Before we get into the stuff, before we get into even our drinks preview, we're going to be talking a little bit more about sustainability today. Specifically, how does the money you spend on coffee get disseminated over the course of multiple organizations? The coffee roaster, the importer, the producer, whatever. So just where does that $16, $15, $20 a pound go? We're going to take it like it's a $16 pound you're buying and go from there. Now, before we get into the nitty-gritty, neither one of us have had our coffee yet, so we have two things in front of us today, and I do thank Christian for contributing to this episode's tasting exercise. We have coffee, but first, more importantly, we have...
Yeah, we have beermosas. It's morning. We need a good morning drink. I'm not a Bloody Mary guy. Mimosas are too fancy. We're in the Brew City.
Beermosa.
Beermosa.
It just works.
Yeah.
Beermosa. What beer did you have in this?
I grabbed, Lagunitas opened up a brewery in Chicago, so we get it all over Wisconsin now, which is awesome. This is the Lagunitas Hop Stupid. It's 102 IBU units.
Whoa.
So pretty bitter, but works really well with this orange juice.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know what a beermosa is, it's pretty simple. It's beer. And it's orange juice. And this one does hold up with the orange juice. I've had a lot. Like, I like a beermosa with, like, a weedy beer. I've had it with Blue Moon.
Blue Moon's good. Hecker Shore is good.
Yeah, I think I've had that. And then I've had people do them with Shock Top, which is a little cheaper. Mm. Yeah, right. But, yeah, Blue Moon's pretty nice because, I mean, it's just got an orangey essence already, so it plays well. But it does tend to get lost a little bit. The IBU on this is, it's crazy because it leaves my mouth feeling like I just drank beer. What's the ABV?
This is an 8%.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I'm just going to have one beer mosa because we have to make it through
4%, today. So
right.
They cut it down the
It's a 16-ounce glass, though. Yeah. So to balance out and make sure we don't fall asleep, we have a new coffee that's coming out this Thursday, which means when you listen to it, it'll have come out last Thursday. And this was a pretty exciting coffee once I tasted it. I didn't really know what to expect, but it's our Guatemala, we call it Preservation, from Huehuetenango.
Yeah, this is, it took us a lot of cupping to find this coffee. We're working with a new supplier in that area, and this one kind of just jumped off the cupping table for us. It was a little fuzzy at first, but Jessica and I went and profiled all the way through it and got some really nice clean acidity on it, some really nice citrusiness, and really, really sweet cup of coffee. So we'll have this around for about 2-3 months, and definitely grab some. It's really good.
Yeah, I'm going to drink a lot of this coffee. Eric, who you would have heard two episodes ago, our founder, said this is, he likes to talk in terms of coffee of the year. He'll normally have one or two coffees that kind of blow him away throughout the year. And this one, I mean, it's not one of those coffees you spend $6 a pound for, but you could. I mean, based on the profile that Christian and Jessica put on it, it is super clean and juicy. Like, it exemplifies that sweet, clean, and juicy profile that we like shoot for at Stone Creek. It's super good. So what kind of tasting notes do you get on this? We should have tasted this before.
That's all good.
Beer.
Yeah, kind of the nice, sweet, caramely, nutty front. Like a really long, sweet linger on it. And then kind of citric malic. A little heavier on the citric. Really citrusy.
Mm-hmm. That's sweet. Like, it's not like a tangy citrus.
Mandarin, or if it's a little more subtle, like a water lemon. And most of you out there probably don't know what it tastes like because we taste them in Central America. But it's kind of like if you had some lemon juice and you put a bunch of water and sugar in it, that's what it tastes like. So really, really mild lemonade.
Got it. All right, so we're going to get into it now. So in prep for this, we created a table that kind of lays out backwards from the customer where the money goes. And there are even blank spots in here that sort of are just assumed, like, but we haven't assigned a dollar amount of, like, expense to them. And they're really just aspects of overhead. They kind of fit in a larger company overhead bucket. But just so you're aware sort of where it all goes,
I would say the first thing that we were really thinking about is there's such a variety of coffee companies and coffee products out there. And I know at least, Drew, we talked to, like, our families don't necessarily buy the best coffee.
Well, and my parents do now.
But, like, they're really price sensitive. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people out there are really price sensitive. So you go to the grocery store and you see I can get a 16-ounce or, like, a 22-ounce bin bucket of coffee for $5. Well, why should I pay $16 a pound and, you know, have to go to a separate coffee shop to do that? And what we're hoping to do is illuminate, like, we're not just, like, making bank on the coffee that we're buying. And in some cases, charging $18, $20, $22 a pound is not unreasonable. And when you go down the entire supply chain, it starts to make a little bit more sense. Mm-hmm. And we're not just, like, banking dollar, banking dollar, banking dollar. We're really not making that much per pound. I don't think any roaster is really making that much per pound, except for maybe big guys. And big guys, I'm talking the guys in the grocery store who can buy it for dirt cheap. And yeah, literally, I mean dirt cheap. But even they are probably not making that much per unit.
Right. It is about creating for a coffee company economies of scale. So the more coffee you buy, the more coffee you sell, the better you get at doing it and squeezing out every additional cent of gross profit you possibly can. Which sounds bad, it's actually not, because we talked about before, we mentioned making a living in coffee as an individual is hard, but making or staying sustainable as a coffee company is equally hard. And those things go hand in hand, is that there's not a lot of money going around in coffee unless you're really good at managing your business from the farm all the way to the cup. And that's not to make it like, oh, poor guys, they work in coffee. No, we love what we do, and Stone Creek is doing well, but it's because we had to learn some hard lessons and get good at a lot of things, and we're still learning. Like, we've got a lot of room to grow in this whole process.
So we're talking about this. Should we start from the producer and work our way back to Stone Creek?
Well, I think it would be better to work from the customer, because that's where they, like, I spend $16, where does that go? So you can build it up or you can take it out, and I would take it out.
Cool.
All right. So $16 a pound is what we're going to operate off of, and a lot of these numbers are pretty accurate, actually, to what we do here at Stone Creek. We made some estimates, but it's pretty sort of real life. So when you buy a $16 pound at Stone Creek, where does the money go? So the first kind of big swath that gets taken out of that, big cost item for us, would be retail labor. Because a lot of our coffee gets sold, you know, if you're a customer buying it at the store, you're spending $16 for it. We have to pay for, well, that store, so there's an aspect of overhead, but the largest aspect is actually just paying for people to man the cafes. So coffee shops tend to have a really low dollars per customer, kind of dollars per ticket item, which is the golden goose of, like, food service, is how much money do you get out of each customer. It's not that much for a coffee shop, for a cafe. So labor can get really, really expensive. If you have two people on the floor all day, some stores you have three, some stores you have four if you're really busy. So just trying to keep up with the customers and provide a customer experience that is great without letting labor take over is hard. So on average, retail labor is about 25% of the purchase price of a given item. So at the end of the day, say we had $800 in sales in a particular cafe, $200 of that would have been spent on labor, just as an example. So 25% of 16 is $4. About $4 of that purchase price you can probably attribute to labor expenses, which leaves you with 12, and yeah, you're not even out of the cafe yet.
We got $12 after left. Labor. What's next?
Beermosa next. After that, you've got all these sort of overhead that goes into that. So the cost of goods sold comes down a little bit lower, but the overhead attributed to the retail unit includes everything like, you know, the rent of the space, the facilities cost to keep everything up. You have training that goes into it. That's more of like a corporate overhead number. So just sort of overhead for running a cafe, you can put like another 20% or so just on things that you don't always see as apparent when purchasing something from a store, all the expenses they have to keep it up. And in coffee, there's a lot of expenses in terms of equipment and whatnot to keep a cafe running well. So we're going to put $3.20 on that, which leaves us only $8.80 before getting into the corporate slash cost of goods sold line items. So then we can, after we've gotten out of the retail unit, we're then in the corporate overhead bucket, which corporate involves everything from Christian's salary to my salary. Like, what's it take to actually run a coffee company? It's not just that one shop, but it's making sure that that shop has all the tools they need to be successful, the information, coffee sourcing, whatnot. And that is pretty equal to sort of like retail overhead numbers. So we put $3.52 on that, which leaves us into leads us to $5.28 left of the revenue we had earned from that $16 pound. Then we start getting into the logistics of actually producing the coffee. So like the production team here, and you like packaging labor, packaging, roasting, roast loss, shipping, like all of that is even before you get back to the farmer. So Christian, walk us down like how production handles this coffee once they get it.
So unlike the retail cafes, we're actually able to allocate labor per pound per unit. We can base that like on average, how much does it cost for us to package a pound of coffee? Everything it takes to make a pound of coffee, that includes roasting it and packaging it, it ends up being about 50 cents per unit. So that's the amount of money we spend on our head roaster and everyone that works in production that takes that coffee from green to roasted product and moves that coffee from the roaster into the individual bags, labels the bags, seals the bags, gets it ready for delivery into the cafes. On top of that, something that most people don't think about, and something that's really real for coffee buyers, is the amount of actual product lost as you go down the supply chain. And we buy coffee in green. So it's green, it's raw, it's unroasted. But when we roast it, we actually lose 15% of the total weight that we purchased. So when we do that, we have to shift a little bit of assuming like, okay, if we had the same weight to start with, we add another 53 cents per pound to adjust for the amount of loss that you've had. And actually, that's something that happens all the way down the supply chain, because when you pick coffee cherry, you get paid a certain amount, and the coffee cherries weigh about 50% more than the actual parchment does. And then you dry the parchment, and then you dry the green. Don't want to get too far down that line, but that's a huge cost for us.
There's just a lot of water in coffee that gets lost in every step.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that anybody's being wasteful. It's not that we're just dumping coffee out, although occasionally, unfortunately, yeah, that does happen.
So, and then on top of that, we have to move the coffee from origin up here, and we become pretty efficient at doing this pretty directly. Like, we have a freight forwarder that we work with. And so most of the time, shipping somewhere around 15 cents per pound. And then we actually have to buy the raw coffee. And we're going to assume just for this argument that, or this demonstration, that we're going to take a green pound, about $3. That's kind of about an average price we pay for one of our direct trade coffees. So when you take all of that all the way through down to the bottom, we started with $16 per pound that you paid for it. We have a total gross profit of like $1.68.
Our net income.
Net income.
Yeah. So that after all of our expenses, in terms of actual money that we get to keep, it's only $1.68. So it's like 10.5%. And that's the average net income kind of across our business. When you factor in drinks and wholesale and all that, is at the end of the day, about 10% of the money we make actually gets to stay in the company to pay taxes, pay debt, and to reinvest into the company. So if you're a small roaster, let's say, and you're just getting started out, and you're year two, you're running about $500,000 worth of revenue, that only leaves you with $50,000 to pay, you know, your debt and with what you have left. And if you're owning that business and you're not drawing like salary from that business, $50,000 is practically nothing. Like, you can't buy another roaster with that. You can't open another cafe with that. You know, that's barely, you know, an executive salary. So all that to say is you have to move a ton of volume. Like, to run a $500,000 business and be left with that net income is, you know, better than a stick in the eye. At least you're positive. But in order to actually grow, you got to be cranking out, you know, a million if you want to grow on your own slowly, or, you know, be a larger business running 5 to 10 million to actually have some leverage to grow your business, which is why I think you see, side note, why I think you see specialty roasters in sort of two classes. There's the much larger, like 10 to 15 cafe roaster that's in Philadelphia and Chicago and Los Angeles and New York, you know, the ones that have sort of spread out and expanded and leveraged their brand. And then there's others who are just like one or two cafes, even though we know they're really good at coffee, just struggling to like keep up because it's about, you know, running that business. And some are really good at it, even though they may have worse coffee, they're really good at the business and at the branding, and so then they create some viability there. Others, not so much. That's just kind of the name of the game. So $3 for green coffee. That's what Christian said we're paying. And we would call that expense that's going back to the farmer now, like green FOB. And what that means is
free on board, free on boat.
So that's what we pay to get it on the boat. That goes to who all's involved in that.
So when we pay an FOB price, it assumes that the shipment and the milling from the producer or the exporter to the warehouse, to actually the shipyard, is included. And when we back that out, it ends up being about 25 cents per pound on average. Depending on country, it could be a little more, a little less, but about 25 cents.
So it's the dry milling and the shipping predominantly.
Dry milling, shipping, bags, making sure that we have Brain Pro bags to make our coffee good. So $2.75. That goes back to the producer. But then you have to think about all the costs that are involved with producing the coffee. And surprise, surprise, the number one cost for a coffee producer, and it ranges from country to country, but it tends to be, again, labor. Because coffee grows on trees, and you have to pick the coffee off the trees. And you have to pay pickers well enough that they want to pick good coffee for you, so picking ripe red cherries, as opposed to just picking by weight and picking everything that they possibly can get their hands on, which actually adds more expense because you have to go through and resort it, or you're not going to get a price premium for it. So we're estimating that to be like $1.65, about 60% of that price. And then a good producer will also be reinvesting in their farm.
So it's hard. It is hard to keep up a farm.
It's hard to keep up a farm. A good producer will fertilize maybe 3, 4, or 5 times a year. They'll go through, they'll prune, they will cut out old tissue, they'll replant new tissue. And we're estimating that to be about 30% of the money that they get from that $2.75, so about 80 cents. So all said and done, the farmers probably get a net income of about 10%, again, like 27 cents per green pound of coffee.
Yeah, so 10% of what they're getting paid in totality actually rests in their pocket. And in a lot of these cases, particularly with small producers, it's not that they were drawing a salary. It's that they're actually left with what is there at the end of the day. So 27 cents a pound. In order to get like a $30,000 annual salary, if you're, you know, just a small producer, you'd have to pick like 100,000. Is that what I came up with? 100,000 pounds of coffee.
That's right.
And that's a lot of coffee. Like, 100,000 pounds in terms of, like, green coffee, in terms of the dried. So before it's even dried, you're talking about 200, 250,000 pounds of coffee that needs to come off your farm. That's a lot. Christian, do you know how much a particular tree would yield, like a traditional, like, Keturah?
Not that much. Yeah, a couple pounds, maybe. Like, if it's really high yielding, you might get 4 or 5 green pounds of coffee off it. But that's even really high. When you actually think about these numbers, it's really astonishing that there are so many small coffee producers that there are in the world. Just traveling to Colombia, and I know most of those people there are not solely coffee farmers, mm-hmm. because they wouldn't be able to make ends meet, so they have to diversify, they have to have other crops or other jobs in order to make that work, because they're 2 or 3 hectares, so a couple acres,
right?
Really not much land, and they're making 20, 30, 40 bags of coffee max, which is not much.
Right, so if you're a small producer, if that is the size of your operation, and it's not full-time, you know, you probably have your family helping out some. But at the end of the day, like, you have to, if you're a coffee producer, generate those economies of scale that we were talking about. Like, you have to have sort of a big farm, or you have to be working in conjunction with other farmers to sort of build your logistics and your capacity. Otherwise, you know, this is not much to be had for you. A big, like, a way of growing this and growing your sort of take home is by increasing your specialty premium. Like, $3 is actually a pretty good price for specialty coffee. It's kind of on average. If you are particularly good at processing, if you can deliver a particularly high quality coffee year after year, odds are pretty good you can actually start to demand more for your coffee, particularly if it starts to get picked up by kind of high profile roasters in the United States. Like, there are people in Panama and then El Salvador, people around who are really good at producing, and they'll fetch, you know, $5 easy per pound, and then sometimes quite a bit more. And then it ultimately lands in profit to some extent, but they do a lot of reinvestment, they do a lot of farm upkeep, they buy a lot of equipment to sort of manage and sustain that quality. So I think from farm to cup, it is safe to summarize and say, like, hey, you know, coffee is not, it's not a money business. You know, the coffee commodity market, which Christian's about to talk about, is sort of a high money business, but that's more of like a stock trade thing. It's not actual coffee trade. It's not actual coffee buying and selling.
Yeah, I was just going to mention, so we're assuming that we're paying $3 a pound for coffee, and usually when I'm working with the producer, I like to understand their cost of production, make sure they're getting something that's sustainable, because if we're not working with the producer that can't bring something back to next year and can't reinvest, there's really no point, because we can't build a future in that relationship. What I did was I pulled up the actual market price for today, and we're looking at December contracts, and if you would sell the coffee on the open market, and there are people who actually go and deliver their coffee at market price, you get $1.52 per pound. So using our current model, $1.52, and you assume that you need to do 60% net, 60% of that price needs to go to labor, but it's probably more than that.
Right.
It's probably about the same amount. So you're looking at almost zero.
After you pay for labor.
After you pay for labor, which means that you can't reinvest in your farm, which means you have no money to, like, put food on the table. And we see a lot of this struggle with a ton of producers in Central America. You see people just walking away from their coffee farms because it's no longer profitable. Mm-hmm. And especially if they have a disease on their farm, like rust, there's no point. There's really no point for them to continue growing coffee because they're losing money by doing it. Mm-hmm. And it's tough. It's really tough to say that. And then coming back around, you have a customer here who's like, well, why do I want to pay $16 a pound for coffee? Because we want to give you a coffee product again and again. We want to build a sustainable relationship at origin so we can keep on bringing that coffee product back for you every single year. It's not like we're trying to just bank money. It's really about creating something sustainable and repeatable and consistent.
Yeah. A couple things to note, too, as we look across sort of this table. Coffee culture is a progressive culture in the United States. Like, people who like coffee or into specialty coffee generally tend to be like socially progressive, and by that I mean desire higher minimum wage, you know, higher benefits and whatnot. And the work itself doesn't really lend itself to that, like a higher minimum wage and whatnot, because we're trying to control labor. So what we end up with is, you know, baristas, like a full-time barista making somewhere between $20,000 and $23,000, if they're well-paid, and if they're not technically like a cafe manager, which sounds like, oh man, like that's not very much money. But what's interesting is if you have a producer at Origin who's taking care of their stuff and is producing 100,000 pounds of coffee, like green coffee, to us, they're not making much more than that. So, like, there is a major difference in sort of standard of living as it's baked into this model, is that, you know, in Colombia and Costa Rica and Guatemala, a lot of times, like, $30,000 take-home, that feels pretty good. Like, you're pretty happy with that. Whereas in the United States, we're not happy with that. And that sort of social commentary is, like, our perception of wealth and poverty is totally skewed. And it's not bad. Like, it's not bad to want a higher standard of living for everybody in the United States. I think we do want that, but we also have to be conscientious of how our desire for a higher standard of living actually impacts other countries. Because what would be easy for us is to increase the standard of living of our employees to the neglect and exploitation of our farming partners. And that's not cool. So it's trying to keep all of these things in balance as best as possible.
And I think what it really does is puts into perspective a price increase. Is what it signals. And what I'm thinking about specifically is that Starbucks just announced a couple days ago, I don't know if you saw this,
Drew, I did see this,
that they're going to raise their wages to the baristas 15%, which I think is a very noble thing for them to do.
Absolutely.
They're actually raising their prices in order to compensate for that. Again, when you see a price raise, it's not necessarily saying the company just wants to make more money off of you. It's like, hey, we're doing something slightly different, and we need to pay all the way down the lines. By analogy, you can't just go and spend more money at home and have a credit card and max it out, and then like, oh, I don't have any more money to pay for it. Oh, well, sorry. That's what puts a coffee company out of business. Like, it would put us in a really tough spot. So you always have to balance what you can ask from the customer and then what you can kind of establish on your infrastructure back home.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you just say we're going to pay people more, you know, that sounds great. But if you don't have more money coming in, you're screwed. But if you raise the prices and you raise them too high, sort of beyond what people are willing to pay for your product, you're also screwed, because then people will stop coming. And it's like a constant battle of where is that line? Like, how much is too much for a pound of coffee? And it depends on the city, and it depends on sort of the microcosm of the city that you're in, because for some of our cafes, based on their immediate clientele, $16 a pound is, you know, it's pretty doable for quality, and people really dig it, and so they buy a lot of whole bean coffee. And then in other microeconomies, people are like, nah, I'll stick with my can of Hills Brothers. I'll come in and get your coffee on the weekend, you know, in a large coffee or a latte or something, because that's kind of their splurge, but they're not going to spend that much for daily coffee. So, yeah, it's a lot to navigate. I mean, hopefully this all helps you understand kind of where that money goes and gives you a good appreciation for the balance that needs to be struck in these pricing models, and the fact that, you know, roasters that actually care about origin are striving to build sustainability there and build sustainability at home, which is no easy task. So just to review down this model, we start at $16 a pound, $4 comes out for labor, $3.20 comes out for retail overhead, leaving us $8.80 at the Stone Creek or at the coffee roaster corporate level. And then we have corporate overhead and roasting expense and packaging and shipping, which takes us down to $4.68 at the corporate level. Then we have to pay for the coffee to actually get it here. And that's $3 out of our pocket, leaving us with $1.68 or 10.5% of the retail price actually available for reinvestment. And then at the farm level, 25 cents leaves for your shipping to the exporter, milling, packaging. So farmer gets $2.75 for a $3 pound coffee. They got to put money in for labor and upkeep and farm investment, and that takes about $2.50 out almost. And then they're left with a net income of, again, about 10%, 27, 28 cents for a $3 pound coffee. Let us know if you have questions. This model changes depending on the coffee, depending on the producer, depending on the country, depending on who's striking, like depending on the sea market. Like, it's pretty dynamic, but this is sort of a generally applicable, like all things being even, model. But we're happy to answer any questions you have, per usual.
You know, and I would encourage you, if you are a regular coffee buyer and you're not a Stone Creek Coffee customer, like you're listening to this out in California or Washington, engage with your coffee shops. Ask where, I mean, I wouldn't be offended if some customer asked, like, where's the money going? Understanding your supply chain, understanding where you're placed in the coffee industry kind of, to me, like, it makes it clear, it makes it better. Like, hey, I want to buy coffee from these people because they understand how to run a really good business. And they're also supporting the farmer on top of supporting their workers as well. And as we kind of defined last time, sustainability, it's kind of that ability to have a tomorrow, to really reinvest and make a lucrative business. So that's equally important to try to understand that.
Yeah. And last thing I would say is it's good for a coffee company, in summary, to want to make money. For them to want to be successful, to sell more coffee, to expand, to grow their business. Because the more they grow their business, the more they create economies of scale, which means they can buy more coffee. And when you buy more coffee, you actually are letting those small producers produce more. Like, you're increasing the livelihood of everybody along the sort of farm-to-cup chain if you're growing, expanding, doing new things. Whereas the perception is, if you're growing, expanding, you're greedy. And we just need to get past that. There are certainly people who are greedy, who use business, who use, sourcing channels to their own gain, to the exploitation of others. Like, there's no forgiving that. But you also can't use that as like a straw man argument against people who want to be successful in business, because there's a lot of great motivation for it. And without people who are successful in business doing work like this, then everybody along the chain gets kind of left to suffer. When the market goes down, everybody suffers. When the market is up, when business is good for some, business tends to be good for others. So keep that in mind. Next time, we'll get back into sort of the cafe and brewed coffee, particularly espresso. There are a lot of myths about espresso after it's brewed. We talked about home espresso and like some tips to kind of pull great espresso at home. But then once you pull it, there's a lot of really funny sort of things that people believe about espresso, like when it's left out. Like, does a shot die? Does a shot go bad? And we're going to kind of discuss the science of what is espresso, like, in its final brewed form? What's the chemical makeup? And then what happens to it after it is pulled? Keeping it perpetually fresh and sustainable. We are geeks.
And we are talking coffee.